everyone. It's Maria.
And this is Jordan. Welcome back to Major Musings.
Welcome back. How you doing, Jordan?
Doing well. How about you?
Pretty good. We officially have an update.
Yes.
About ourselves for grad school.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Do you want to...
Do you want to go first?
I can, yeah.
Okay.
I will be going to the University of Texas at Austin for a master's in art history.
And I will be going to the University of Chicago for a master's in art history.
Woo!
Woo.
Go us.
Doesn't feel real. Go us. if anyone's interested, Jordan's wearing a University of Texas sweater already. She already bought one.
Yeah. I'm just excited. She's committed.
I know. We're both excited. I'm excited for you. I'm excited / terrified for myself. But yeah, because my program is 9 months. So a year from now, I will be writing my thesis, which kind of makes me want to cry, but I'm just not going to think about it right now.
Yeah, no. It's fine. You know, maybe a year from now as well, if we can remember when we're doing the podcast still, hopefully, fingers crossed, we can do kind of an update with, like, what our thoughts are on, like, the respective programs that we chose, since you are doing a shorter and kind of more intense program than I am.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. Hopefully, even with the intensity of it, we'll have the time respectfully to keep this going, and we'll update everyone then.
I really hope so, too.
Yeah. So, that's us, and if any of our other listeners applied to grad school and are now in the process of, you know, committing or making a decision, we hope that that process goes well for you as well, and... You know, we feel everything you're feeling.
Yes.
So.
It's been a crazy year in general, but especially for jobs and grad school type things, it's been especially weird. So wherever you are, you're doing good.
Exactly. So on that note, Jordan, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, I would love to. So today I'm talking about Elena Damiani. She is a Peruvian artist who is currently living, I believe, in Copenhagen. Which is fun considering we went last year. But
I love Copenhagen so much.
Yes. I saw online that she also has a number of studios in, I believe, Peru and Mexico City. So I'm not sure if she, you know, as of recently with COVID and everything, is still in Denmark or if she's back in Peru, but so she's got spots in South America and Europe, so very international, but
nice.
She studied architecture and fine arts at the University of Peru, and she received an MFA from Goldsmiths College in London. And I think I mentioned this at the end of the last episode, but I learned about her from the Harn Museum, from their exhibit in 2018 called The World to Come. That exhibit was really pivotal for me in terms of my development and interests in, like, land art, environmental art, and sustainability studies more broadly. And I really love a lot of the artists who were included in that exhibit. And that, of course, includes Damiani. So I'm excited to talk about her today.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping that at some point since we started this that you would talk about an artist from that exhibition, because our first episode was kind of a mess. But as we were in that episode, you know, we talk about that exhibit and how a conference surrounding that exhibit was really one of the ways that you and I connected as friends in the very beginning so well. So, and I got to find out about your interests through that exhibit. So I'm excited to hear about this artist.
Yeah, it's fun. It comes full circle a little.
Absolutely.
So Damiani's research draws on geology, archaeology, and cartography to explore fragmentation, reinterpretation of documented material rationalized by the sciences, and studying the composition, evolution, and history of the Earth. So I believe that was from her own website. So that's a little bit about what her artistic practice includes. And she often collects and works with found materials. So things like books, photographs, video footage, and public records that you might not normally think of as, quote, high art. So, so looking at like found material, using things that are already made and that didn't originate in an artistic context, and then turning that into her work. And she said of her practice involving scientific disciplines and materials that it is a curiosity for understanding that leads me to research scientific material. So she's really interested in investigating knowledge and how we acquire that knowledge, as well as history and time and how we as humans understand that more broadly. And and with all of that, looking at how we can kind of decide what is truth, what is false, and how absolute truth doesn't necessarily exist in both the sciences and the arts. And so I think that's really interesting.
Absolutely.
She has said that she tries to maintain a certain distance between the viewer and the work, so that even though she's using these scientific materials or working within these scientific disciplines, there are some things that are left in the dark for the viewer, for them to find out for themselves. So trying to create this multiplicity of readings, as she has said, in her work. So I think that's really interesting, because a lot of the times with the sciences, it's like, you know, you have the scientific method, and it seems like by proving these things through scientific study that then there is no option for them to be wrong or, you know, whatever. And she's trying to really show through the arts that this isn't necessarily true, that science can be falsified, what we know and understand isn't necessarily true, and that perhaps it's been not necessarily all a lie, because that sounds kind of intense, but just asking the viewer to question what they're seeing.
Right.
So in almost all of her works, she has tried to investigate or point out that our understanding of time and history should not be linear. So I think I might have talked about this in another episode, if not more than one, but just this idea of time and the different types of time. So I know I've talked about deep time before. That's going to come back again, where she is using deep time in her works. And I think it was when we were talking about Melina Slam and her film Altiplano, when we were talking about time being like circular, kind of, and like wrapping back on itself, and like seeming both to go on, like in that case the film or the space of the Altiplano existing forever, and then also seeming like nothing has changed. And so even though Damiani isn't, she doesn't tend to work with film as her primary medium, a lot of her works still are investigating this question of time and how we can understand time and how it isn't just this necessarily linear thing, and that maybe it is circular, or that as humans, we just can't fully even comprehend the scale of time, the scale of deep time, even thinking about it in a linear sense is just, like I've said before, it's kind of incomprehensible for us.
To us, yeah.
Yeah. And so she often will begin her research in scientific disciplines, like I said before, such as archaeology, geology, cartography, and then other earth-related sciences. But she likes to make a point of acknowledging that just because these are, quote, scientific studies, it does not mean that they're definite or concrete, and that there's no room for questions. So she really wants there to still be room for the viewer to question what is being shown, the methodologies behind it, and what she is presenting for them. So the works are questioning knowledge and how we are understanding these different scientific principles.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And she said, which I really like this quote, and this kind of speaks to the question of deep time as well. But she said, "I am interested in pointing out that the presence of the human is very ephemeral compared to the large scale of time in planetary history."
Wow.
Yeah. So very going back again, very much to that sense of deep time and
right,
and a little bit of the sublime as well, which
yeah,
I'll mention a little later, but she does talk about the sublime a bit in an interview that she did.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, like I mentioned before, she trained as an architect and her work is very much informed by this training. And so she has an interest in the built environment and also the landscape and the natural environment. And she has stated that by studying architects like Tadao Ando, Louis Barragan, and Le Corbusier, she learned how context and personal experience play a role in shaping ideas, which I really like.
That's interesting. And it reminds me of, I feel like this has become a trend with some of the artists we talked about. Salwa Raudashker was very interested in architecture and said that, you know, if it wasn't art, she would have got into architecture. And she kind of has the same mentality when approaching, you know, the natural world and the landscape, but through her sculpture. And then even Rania Matar was trained as an architect and kind of unconsciously, she doesn't think about it as much, but unconsciously she kind of captures this almost architectural frame or technique in her images as well.
Yes. Yeah. When I was going back over my notes about Damiani and remembered that she trained as an architect, I thought of Rania as well. And I think it's really cool how both of them, you know, started out in architecture, but now their work has taken them to such different places, but there's still that foundation
from which, that training,
which
it's not something you can let go of,
sorry.
Nice.
but yeah, no, I thought that was really cool. And it's that's interesting that, like how you pointed out, a number of artists that we've talked about now all kind of have that interest too.
Pretty cool.
And so Damiani has said, quote, "I realized I was less interested in functionality than in the visual and plastic features of objects and the relationships that arise between elements in the constructed space. Those interests have been constant throughout my practice as an artist, and they have led me to work with territory, geology, and landscape." So, so kind of taking, like we were saying, the foundations of the architecture training, but then utilizing different elements that they were trained to look for in moving forward in their artistic practice. And so this outlook has led her to the study of cartography specifically and other forms of map making. And so she'll use maps in a number of her works. And she actually does a lot of like collaging of different materials. So I mentioned before how she'll use like found footage before, so like older photographs or maps, older maps, and kind of layer those together and put them together in different pieces. And so her own cartographic work doesn't actually look at the precise mapping of territories or places, but instead it's demonstrating in what she considers a poetic way how a landscape could be familiar to a person. And I think when I read that online, that really struck me because it reminded me a lot of the first artist who I talked about, Otobang Nkanga, and how she was investigating how a landscape could be familiar to someone or how you could have a memory of a landscape or a place.
Yeah.
And again, I just think it's really cool and fascinating how these artists are, you know, working from somewhat similar questions, but the end product of their work is very different, and it feels very much still unique to them.
Right.
And so Damiani then is interested in visual and aesthetic qualities of a map and what they can bring for the viewer, and not so much the technical and precise scientific materiality of the map. And so she likes also the visual content of the landscape images. So like the found photographs from, like, I believe National Geographic or like USGS, which is the US Geological Survey. So places that originally were meant as like documentary type things, you know, like documenting what the land looked like or how we were experiencing the land when it was first being quote unquote discovered, you know, and then reinterpreting how that looks now and using the aesthetic visuals for the works.
Right.
Along with these found materials, she'll often work with actual geological materials. So like marble or travertine or different types of rocks, you know. A number of her works I've seen online use marble or travertine, and they're beautiful. But by using these materials and presenting it as she does in the works, you're able to see layers of rocks and sediments, and therefore you can see time in a way that you often wouldn't otherwise normally be able to, like, tangibly see. And so I'm thinking of specifically this one called, I'm just going to say the English, the English name of it, because I'm not going to be able to pronounce the Spanish.
That's fine.
But we posted it on our Instagram. It's Sediments, an Assemblage of Remains. Another example is Rude Rocks. And I really like both of those. And with Sediments, I think that one is a really great example, because not only does it show how she uses the geology, so like how she's using, I believe it's travertine in that one. I might be wrong, but that's okay. So she's using the rocks to show different passages of time. But with that one, it's it was an installation at a museum in Mexico, I believe. And so she's really like calling back on her architecture training, I feel like, to engage with the space in that and in how she was setting up the works. And I think it creates a really interesting experience for the viewer to be able to experience it there. I believe it was from 2015, and I wish I could have been able to see that, because the photos of it look so beautiful. Like, I really love the whole aesthetic of all of her works.
Yeah, I really like it too.
Yeah, something about just like the kind of like the simplicity, but the natural material of it as well. I don't know, it really speaks to me.
it's beautiful from the images that you shared on our social media. It's really something else.
Yeah. And regarding the rocks and how they can speak to the passage of time, Damiani has pointed out that they actually are full of cracks and pores, and that this is kind of a way that you can filter information or history. So, I mean, obviously, history is not literally being filtered through rocks, because that wouldn't really make sense. But it's kind of like that metaphor of how we, you know, maybe only record and retell certain parts of history or information. Yeah. Just like we can only see certain parts of the rocks when they're in their natural environment. And it's only when they've been extracted and displayed like she has put them in the works that you see these minute changes, and that that they are porous. And so I think that is
she exposes what you don't normally see or think of.
Yeah, and she's described her works as wanting them to be poetic. And I think they are. I mean, I just said that that they were like a metaphor. So
yeah,
I think she succeeds in creating this poetic version. So in some of the works, like in I believe in Sediments, and then in the one in the series Rude Rocks, she'll also use metal particularly copper, I believe that was noted. I think it's something about conductivity and the light shining off of it. And she also will often use other types of natural materials like wood. And so she uses wood in a frame in the series Fading Fields, which is what the Haran Museum had in their exhibit. It was, and we posted this on Instagram as well, but the work that was included, it was called Fading Field Number 9. And I just remember seeing it and being like stunned at how cool and beautiful it was in person. So I'll talk a little bit more in depth about that one, just since I, you know, had the chance to see it in person, and I've done, I think I did like a presentation on it in one of the classes I took. So, so in this whole series, Fading Fields, she sutures together images of geological formations from different geographic locations in various temporalities. So what she does is she'll find like two or three different images from different sources, and they feature different places, and they're from different times usually, and then she'll layer them on top of one another. So for this one, there are three layers, and the first one features the Mauna Ula eruption of the Kilauea volcano in Hawaii from 1969. The second layer is from Mount St. Helens in Washington State in 1983. And then the third one is also Mount St. Helens, but it's this new slab growth in 2006. Oh. Yeah, so I think a lot of us know and understand mountains and these huge rock formations are growing and changing. They just, they change at such a small rate in terms of our time, that often like we can't see it on a day-to-day or year-to-year basis. And so you wouldn't be able to see something like slab growth unless you're looking at something from like the 80s and then the early 2000s. Yeah. And as you're looking at the image, you can probably notice that it's kind of difficult to tell where the different layers start and end, especially considering that for this specific one, two of them are from the same location. They're just from a different time. And this was chosen on purpose. So she wanted the layers to be blurred and for there to be kind of the blending of the different locations and temporalities. And what's really interesting and important to note as well is the material on which those layers of images are printed. So they are a silk, they're printed on a silk chiffon, so it's a very transparent material. And depending on the angle that you're looking at this sculpture, you either are going to very much be able to see the background, like the wall, and to see that it's a single layer of silk, or you're just going to see the images like blended together. So so that material is very important for the viewer, and therefore the viewer's place in the gallery or museum space is critical to seeing the work, because it changes from the direction in which you're viewing the piece, which is really cool. It makes for a really cool viewing experience.
That is really cool.
Yeah. And so then of course the silk is framed within wood, so bringing back this natural element to the work. So for example, some of the images that, you know, may be on like her website or on like the Museum of Modern Art's website, because I believe they have a piece from this series, it shows the frame at an angle against the wall. So like you can see the black rectangle or whatever painted on the wall behind it. When it was installed at the Haran, it was parallel to the wall. So it's a little bit different than like the images, some of the other images that have been
produced. You can't tell as much,
Yeah, so I'll have to put some of like the images I took of the work. We can put those on Instagram just so that the listeners can see what it looked like in case in case they didn't see the exhibit, because when you looked at it straight on, you just saw like the wooden frame and the three images, you know, blended together on the silk. And then when you would walk around, you could see the frame on the side. Yeah, exactly. So this use of silk is really crucial as well for understanding the role of time in this work, because like I've talked about before, for humans, geological time or deep time is often like unfathomable. It's so difficult to comprehend what thousands of years or hundreds of thousands or millions of years means, even though geology is operating on this time scale. And so it's kind of showing that, you know, what seems like a definitive or unmoving geological entity can in fact be mobile and be changing. Right. It's just operating within a different temporality from what we as humans are operating with and what we're more familiar with. So kind of the silk and the way that you can change the perspective of the image based on where you're standing kind of helps you understand this in a way.
Yeah.
Damiani has stated that, quote, only through the eyes of the present can we catch a glimpse of the past, and that both realms, virtual and physical, merge constantly in the act of remembrance.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and so I mentioned that she'll use a lot of found footage and archival photographs.
Yeah.
And so this is an attempt to create this dialogue with geology that we aren't used to having. So like how normally we wouldn't be able to see the growth that Mount St. Helens was experiencing, by using these archival photographs, we're able to see this and we're able to understand how it is changing.
I was just going to say, because now I'm just thinking about how you said that at the Harn Museum, it was placed in parallel to the chiffon. So, which is interesting, because now that I'm looking at images, not just the one we posted, but those on her website as well, you're right that the wooden frame is angled. So you can definitely see that chiffon.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because maybe that's why I don't remember it as distinctly displayed at the Harn. Maybe because I walked past it and just didn't notice.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. So. And I don't know if Damiani kind of, you know, provides that curatorial choice in like when she
you know,
sells the work or loans it out to a museum, or if the curator just decided to do it like that. But I mean, either way, I think it creates a more dynamic viewing experience having it positioned like it was at the Harn, just because you have more opportunity to walk around and experience it in a different in different ways.
From all angles, yeah.
Yeah. And so Damiani actually has stated that the works in the Fading Field series oscillate from solid to translucent in the way that memory often comes to someone.
Ah,
yeah,
that is cool.
Yeah. And
love that.
Yeah. She produces installations of uncanny and ghostly landscapes that hover between past and present, blurring our recollections and collective memory. And the delicate material of the silk also specifically speaks to the idea of memory and in relation to deep time, because, you know, like what we're seeing,
time is delicate.
Yeah, exactly. And what we're seeing at first glance maybe would seem to be one photograph if you don't know the context or you haven't read like the wall text yet or something.
Right.
And then that slightest change in position reveals the fact that
changes
this is not a photograph.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That there's more to the work than what we see at first glance. Mm-hmm. And this is also kind of similar to memory in that it's often not what we think of when we're first remembering something. Like, I remember hearing this, I don't know, I guess it's like a fact that a lot of times a memory that you think about a lot and you feel like you have a very clear remembrance of it there's often details missing, or like you are fabricating what happened, because like the more you think about it, the more your brain tries to fill in all of those missing details, and it and so you're, the more you have to really consider it and think about what it was.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's She's cool. also said about the images used in the Fading Field works that, quote, though the series gives the impression of drawing on the picturesque, I actually see it as closer to the notion of the sublime, which I can very much see and would agree. And, you know, we...
Was she also a writer? Because everything she says is so poetic.
I know. I have not seen anything that she, you know, did any, like, formal writing or anything in her studies. But, yeah, everything she says is just...
Very like, impressive,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she calls the landscapes both riveting and savage, which I really like. And that's, you know, savage in like very like primal way, like unchanged by the human hand, which I really like. So another quote, since we both love her writings or her, you know, just her comments on her own work so much.
Yes.
She said in an interview, quote, I have a great curiosity for trying to understand how structures greater than the magnitude of human life are formed or how they work. It is a reflection of how we understand time, how we understand nature, how we acquire this knowledge, and also how the porosity of information and material leaves things that always remain under the surface and in the dark. And
oh my God.
I know, but like, it seems like so much that she's tackling in her works, and somehow it all comes together and it feels effortless.
She words it so effortlessly. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you know, just to kind of sum up who she is as an artist, she has said, quote, I feel I have a responsibility to make visible the unpredictability of time and the contingency of the environment, and to raise awareness of climate change, taking measures to reduce our now obvious impact on the environment. Mm. So I really love this as well, especially, you know, coming from that interest in sustainability and the environment too.
Yeah, definitely.
And this also speaks to some of her more recent endeavors, particularly within like the last few years. She's starting to really think about how humans have impacted the environment. And I think I read that she was looking at some sort of like geothermal or solar technology or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It was really interesting. She's currently investigating solar geoengineering technologies that would offset global warming by redirecting the sunlight that hits the Earth's surfaces. And she said that this research is still in its early phase, and that she doesn't entirely know where that project will take her, but that is a recent interest that she's had.
I mean, I love that. And one of the reasons why I love that exhibition altogether, A World to Come, is because, you know, so many people disregard the arts or think of it as this kind of singular thing, but really it's so multidisciplinary, and so many artists tap into engineering, tap into the sciences, tap into these STEM fields that actually enrich their work and make learning about it that much more interesting.
Yes.
So, I don't know, I think it's so cool. I mean, I have a friend of mine who, he graduated with his MFA, but he also approached his art from a very kind of tech perspective. His MFA was in art and technology.
Yeah.
So, I just love how multidisciplinary the arts is, and people should really recognize that more.
Yeah, exactly. And even as technology changes, I think art and tech, like as a kind of, you know, discipline or whatever within arts, I think it's just gonna grow even more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I that's one of the reasons as well that I am so interested in kind of land art, environmental art and stuff, because the issue of climate change and needing to find sustainable practices for our world is so critical. And I think that the arts is one of the best ways that people can learn more about it and become more invested in it by, you know, seeing a piece of art that moves them. Maybe maybe they will care more about changing their own habits or changing the way that things operate in the world more. Yeah, so
exactly.
I don't know, but yeah, so that's a little bit about Damiani. I think it's pretty obvious why I like her so much. So
just a little.
Yeah.
It's not that obvious.
But yeah, thanks for listening. I hope that
Thank you for sharing.
I hope you learned a little bit more about her after seeing her briefly at the Harn.
Yeah. So, and to anyone who didn't, hopefully you'll get a better idea of her through this, you know, wonderful episode.
So. Yeah. So who will you be talking about in the next episode, Maria?
So I will be talking about Huguette Calon. She is Lebanese. She's actually the daughter of the very first president we had post-colonial Lebanon. So after France, you know, left us alone, basically. So her father was the first president, and she's a very well-known Lebanese artist. She actually had kind of a similar background to Shker, which I feel like is now a trend with a lot of Lebanese artists from the modern era, that she spent a lot of time in Paris. So, you know, she paints and sculpts erotic, semi-abstract bodyscapes, and she kind of explores the feminine body as well. So I'm excited to talk about her.
Cool. Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thank you for sharing, Jordan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks everyone for listening. Hope you guys all
We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.